Welcome to Life Pairings, where two Canadian alcohol connoisseurs mix life events and libations. Hello, I'm Carla Richards.
And I'm Brittany Lysing.
And this is Life Pairings. Because life is hard.
So pair with alcohol.
Well, it's cold and I can't breathe. I just saw a frozen dead body, and I'm pretty sure my own fingers have frozen and died. But that selfie is going to make it all worth it, as today's life pairing is Everest with Mountain Dewy.
We discuss newfangled drowning and traffic.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Traffic, that's fun.
Oh, it's pretty fun.
So this may feel like a bit of a weird life pairing episode. So shall I maybe explain why we picked
this? I think this is your life event because you've encompassed yourself in this story.
Yeah, I go through phases every couple years where I just get super interested in mountaineering and watch 7,000 documentaries on them and read 100 books. But the reason that I kind of picked Everest is because it is this sort of measurement that we have in our society, in our world, of like top tier. If you can climb Everest, that's, you know, you're the shit. Like that's the best life accomplishment that you can make.
Right. Yeah. And that's definitely what people think of it. They're like, oh yeah, this is like the greatest accomplishment of all time.
And for some reason it feels attainable.
Yeah.
Which is very much part of our society because we were told as children, we can do whatever we want.
I'm actively choosing not to do.
Yeah.
To do all the things. I make a daily choice to just go back to sleep. You're right though. Like, I mean, that it is very like, thing of just like you could climb Mount Everest if you wanted to.
Yeah, if you really dream hard. We also use it as a measuring tool. Like there, a couple of years ago, I think John Oliver did a segment on this, and you know, he kind of made the point like, you know, this is the Everest of bacon wraps, or this is the like, you know, that we kind of use it as like this form of measurement almost.
Yeah, of like even the drink that's the wrong one.
this is the Everest of green drinks that we've
this
had.
This is the here. Everest of green drinks, Carla. it's definitely like it's a thing that everyone just thinks is the biggest, baddest. And now actually Kilimanjaro is taller, right?
I don't think so.
It is not?
Everest is the tallest.
Okay.
But it's not a technically hard climb.
Oh, I see.
K2 like in terms is of like the deadliest. Kilimanjaro is hard, but not impossible.
Can I tell you this in all sincerity, in all honesty? I have no interest in these people. I like this topic, but I have no interest in people who want to do this.
No, I feel the exact same, and I think that's kind of why, like, I don't know if you're going to talk about the psychology as to why people get obsessed with Everest. I assume the reason that I get obsessed with the idea of Everest is kind of because it's like a car crash. But in a way that you're like watching rich, stupid people do things.
Yeah, this is honestly. It is. It costs so much money to do. Like, I'll dive into psychology here. It's so dumb. It's like, honestly.
And I should say on top of this, like, we are talking about Everest in terms of like a commercial, marketable, whatever thing. Professional climbers, totally different.
But they're not
the ones causing the problems. Well, see, I got not professional climbers, but I have climbers in me.
I know, but it's it's not my thing. Like, I get it. I have people who ride bikes up mountains too, but I'm just like, and it's my sweet brother who I love with all my heart, but he's like, would you like to do this with me? I'm like, no, let's get a pedicure.
I have no Yeah, like, no interest. There's in so much. There's better things that I, you know, can accomplish.
I gotta be honest with you. I honestly have no respect for it either. Like I don't detest. I don't detest it. I think it's great. You do you. But I'm not. When people are like, I climbed a mountain, I'm always like, right. Why? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's no, like, okay. You, like, right. You know that people don't have water. Like, you could spend your time. Like, you seem like a go-getter. Like, I'm naturally lazy. So, like, if I don't do stuff, like, yeah, that's my personality.
Yeah.
People are, like, go to all this trouble and spend hours a day, like, being, like, it's a thrill. You know what it is? I'm just bagging on them for fun. But it's a thrill. People are thrill seekers. That's, like, what they want. They get adrenaline from the fear. So I was trying to, like, I really was just looking in, trying to be unbiased, trying to be, like, why is it that people actually want to climb Mount Everest? And more than anything, it's just, it's the fear that they like.
So kind of like jumping out of a plane or...
Yeah. It just is like people, like we've discussed all these things before in previous episodes with thrill seeking stuff. It's the serotonin levels. It's the feeling of defying death. It's the feeling of, but then also if you get into like a little bit of the narcissism of it, like it's the feeling of being better than people.
Yeah,
it's you're better than somebody. You climbed the tallest mountain. And the thing about this thing is it is fairly narcissistic because it's actually not good for the mountain. It's not particularly good for the people of Nepal. No. It's not good for...
Kind of not.
Like, in terms of money, but there's a lot of people that die doing it. So... there is, like, what you're doing is you're basically, you have this dream of conquering this mountain, but without looking at the cost of, like, what you're costing others, essentially.
Exactly. So I do remember when one professional climber saying, like, you know, there are people that are going to go up Mount Everest because there are CEOs and they think that that's going to look real good on their website or something. But he said even professional climbers, like, they're leaving their families alone at best 2 months a year to go climb these mountains. At worst, they're like gone all the time. And then they'll just leave them. That's, you know, like it's in, sometimes it's more of a when rather than an if you'll die on mountain climbing. So.
And specifically this mountain, like the survival rate is not great. And the, like people going up that high, like, they basically explained it as when you climb up that high, the altitude actually just slowly kills you. So you're kind of in a race with time. So if the conditions aren't right or you're not right, you're not mentally and physically prepared because there is a huge mental aspect to this beyond the physical aspect of it. You are literally like, it's death. It truly is death defying. Like you're putting your body under incredible stress just to prove that you could beat these odds.
I know. Which, and I don't know what other kind of things, maybe diving, similar-ish?
Similar things happen to your body when you dive. So the air pressure just changes, and our bodies are accustomed to a certain amount, air pressure. So if you dive down really deep, that starts to be an incredible pressure on your lungs. That's why you can't come up really fast. And actually,
why you can't climb mountains really fast.
That's right. And why you can't descend quickly as well. So actually, not that it's particularly related to like descending too quickly, but more people die coming down Mount Everest than they do going up.
I believe that's a psychological problem though.
Maybe it is. It's also just like, have you ever tried to walk down a mountain? It's pretty hard.
It's very hard. That's true. Like,
it is actually easier to walk up because you have grips and stuff you can hold down to. Like when you think it's easier coming down, but you look down, you're like, well, I don't have anything to hold on to anymore. Like, I'm looking down, dude. This sucks.
And it is hard on your knees and it's harder on your joints, I think, just in general. The reason that people die is because they push to the summit and they get... Are you going to talk about summit fever?
Well, I was going to talk about more the psychological aspect of They basically, like, know they can't do it. Is this the summit? Yeah. I don't know if this summit. They know they can't do it. They know they won't make it. They know the conditions aren't right and they need to turn around. And they basically die trying just because their ego gets in the way of them. And then not to mention the cost is it starts at like, I think it starts at $11,000. Oh, sorry. It starts at $35,000 and it ranges from $35,000 to $100,000. So there's an $11,000 price tag on just like the permit to get up there.
Right. And you don't want to pay just $11,000. It's like paying like $5 for a tattoo. You don't want that one.
Well, that's just the permit.
Oh, that's just the permit. Sorry.
That's just the permit to go get on the mountain and be given like a Sherpa and to guide you. And that's just so you're allowed to go. That's not your flights in. That's not your training. That's not your gear. That's not your oxygen tanks. Like the amount of gear, effort, oxygen tanks, and training it takes to do something like this is incredible. Like people train for years and years and years to do this. So like the cost is actually, I mean, they say between $35,000 and $100,000, but that's a lot of money to fly all these places, not work, put yourself up and train.
Yeah.
To do these things. So yeah, what happens is people start to get like, oh, I paid all this. It's almost like it starts to become an embarrassment, they say too.
Well, and what's that? I've just been trying to rack my brain. What's that? It's the all-in fallacy or something, or what's it called? All-in fallacy, where because we're invested so much in, we won't, hold on.
Yeah, you like won't turn around. You're too far in.
Yeah.
It's like, but
yeah, I know like what you mean. Yeah. So turning around, and especially when your brain's maybe not working as well because you have lack of oxygen.
Yeah, it's not even to mention that.
Yeah.
And then also, this is the type of personality that would do this. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody who would turn around and stop and quit.
No, because that person. That's why you and I have not climbed Everest.
I don't climb Everest. Sometimes I don't climb stairs. Sometimes I'm just like, I live in the bottom now.
Bunny's lying. She loves running upstairs. Every time I see her run up, she runs upstairs. So.
Oh, I do actually do that. It's like real.
You do love
stairs. Do you know why? And this is the reason is going to not make sense. It's going to contradict itself. It's because I hate climbing stairs so much that I just get it over really quickly.
No, that
I don't want to like drawl it out. So these people just, dude, they honestly just are like, I have to do this, but like for who? Who? They're not doing it for anyone but themselves. Yeah. So this is the funniest thing.
That is ultimately
like you lived for no one, you died for no one, you are cold, and now also like put other people's lives at stake as well because you're like with a team, and the whole idea of it. Is just absurd to me.
It is very much. And I think there's a documentary I sent you. I can't remember what it's called, but it's about the 2019 season. And one guy that was on there, it was about a lot of the Indian climbers, and his dad had taken out a loan for him to climb Everest. So how do you then turn around, right? And especially, I guess, in India, it's quite prestigious to, like, it's very, or not, maybe not prestigious, but very popular to climb Everest. Because it's not
okay.
But it's still very expensive. But yeah, how do you turn around when you're like, shit,
my dad.
I mean, I would always just say I'm going to Everest. I would never say I'm climbing Everest.
It's obviously, you know, and that's another thing, like, okay, so that's more money at stake because it's not even your money. You borrowed this money. Maybe it isn't a prestigious thing, but there's this expectation that you'll do it. And then, you know what happens when you're done and you climbed it and you come down and you're successful at doing it? Sadness.
And lots of times you don't have as many fingers and toes as you left with.
Well, but also you just did the thing that you geared up your whole life to do, and then you accomplished it, and now what?
Yeah, that's fair. That's then we're saying all goals are not good. But
No, but specifically this.
yeah.
Like, this is what
Yeah, I guess
happens.
both. Yeah, if this is your white whale or whatever, right?
Yeah, so you come down and then you really haven't accomplished anything. Like,
No.
you didn't help anybody, you didn't do
No.
anything, you didn't make money, you didn't provide for
No.
people, you literally climbed this mountain, you dedicated your entire life to it, and then you came down and your life is still exactly the same.
Yes, exactly. I
Like,
mean,
it's
like a
not at
lot of
all
the
like other goals.
I've seen a lot of people too, like they'll climb Everest to show they'll have like a sponsor. So Nokia or something. They'll fly a flag of Nokia on the top of the mountain. And like that kind of thing just makes me want to vomit. Like it really, I understand if you're like a professional climber, that's the only way that you're going to make money. That's different because you're a professional athlete and they all do that. If you're John Smith from Oregon, who the like, why? They don't need it. That professional people do the things.
Even if they are, like, I mean, if you're somebody who could climb Mount Everest, I would then, if someone didn't call me professional, I'd be like, guys, I just did what you did. I think we're the same now. Like,
Yeah, and I think the new kind of I've read a couple of quotes from climbers and stuff saying they have absolutely no interest in climbing Everest. Like
well,
it's
it's
not a
like,
prestigious mountain. It's
dude, it's
embarrassing
the
now.
Banff of Mount, like, it's literally like the most touristy place. And it's like,
Yeah.
it's that's another thing I was wanted to talk about. The traffic is actually a major problem up there
Yes.
because there never used to be this many people trying to climb it. So now, actually, if something happens and they're in the middle of their climb, and there's too many people in front of them and too many people behind them, and like they can't maneuver the same way, like, it's really it's bad. It's not good.
Well, and I guess we should kind of explain a couple of things. So there's a section that you get up to. Hold on, I don't look at my notes so I don't fuck them up because this is involving numbers. So, and the area above 25,000 feet, which I think is 8,000 meters, so basically like 8 kilometers in the air above sea level, that's where this death zone happens, where you don't get enough oxygen. Apparently, there's 40% less oxygen there than at sea level. And so you, I mean, like, unless you're an elite climber, you need to climb with oxygen. In fact, it's really, really selfish if you don't climb with oxygen because most likely you're going to be really fucked and someone's going to have to help you. So you can only carry so many oxygen tanks, and those oxygen tanks only have so much. It's not like they're just like there's like a thing at the top of the hill that just like giving them out. So if you go out with like 8 hours of oxygen, that's all you have. If you get stuck in your traffic jam for
That's
6 hours, that's it. You're fucked. You're
Yeah, there's
fucked.
n you can't yeah, there's nothing you can do. Like,
Yes.
if there's too many people ahead of you, too many people behind you're
That
done.
would be the most anxiety thing for me is not being able to I don't know how hard it is to actually then turn around.
I mean,
Like angle
well,
back down
apparently
because there's people behind you.
another thing about this mountain is it's just like, I mean, it's different weather patterns, different parts of the mountain, and that's what makes it hard and incredibly difficult everywhere, is that the conditions change. So
Rain.
they don't quite know what it's going to be. Also, like, there's only 1 month, basically 1 month out of the year you can climb this mountain.
Yeah, you can only climb in May.
Yeah, because you're either in complete monsoon season or
Yeah.
it's too cold. So
Yeah.
you're like, really, there's like this tiny pocket, and then within that pocket, it's the weather patterns are so variable that nothing can be really forecasted that well.
Yeah.
So
And I mean like they're getting better technology, but they're still like the storms have caused that caused like the 1996 disaster. Then 2019 had I think it was 11 people died. That was because they only had like a 2-day window in all of May because the weather was so bad. So it's it's just like, it's like the biggest bet on your life. It's not like at the end of it you get like $1 million. You just lose $1 million and maybe your life.
I gotta be honest with you, at the end of this, you're still just a geologist named Jerry. There's nothing else. Like, you're just like, you're like a story at a party. Like, the like some people will just go like, hey, they'll tell their kids, they're like, hey, did you know Jerry here climbed Mount Everest in 1976? And the kids are so woke now, they're like, yeah, well, those people didn't get paid enough to help you. No one's gonna care.
I know.
Yeah,
I
like, would, no one cares anymore. Now it's like this thing of just like, who's doing this? No. This is basically like the elephant head of mountains. It's like, hey man, keep your ivory. We don't want it, elephant killer. Like, it's, it doesn't matter. It's like, you're not accomplishing anything. You're only hurting things, and you've proved nothing to no one. And,
but the thing is, it, you're totally right about like the kind of that ivory thing. Like, I wonder if that it's kind of our generation's collecting of ivory.
It's just unnecessary. It makes no sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also weirdly kind of attainable.
Yeah.
Because if you have enough money, you can,
but like, yeah, if you have enough money, like, basically, you can do really anything. You can go to the moon if you got enough money.
Like, there's people there that don't know how to use crampons, which are, like, the, like, I don't think they get very far, but, like, they're the things you put on your shoes to climb up.
But part of me heard tampons, and I was like, I mean, pretty self-explanatory. crampons, all those are the things that go in the holes that hold you on?
Those are the things that go on your shoes.
Oh.
They're basically like, you know, in golfing, how you have like pokey things coming out of your shoes, or
I see.
Other sports probably have that, cleats. Yeah, it's kind of like fancy cleats. But for ice.
Why are people doing this? Like, every time I learn a new thing about this, I'm like, I don't know what part of you wants this. Like,
yeah, and you have to climb on like metal ladders with those, which. I know.
You're like, no, you can't. This is insane. Well, yeah, there's just...
And that's the thing is, I think it would be a less of an interesting topic, maybe, if people were just like, wow, that does sound really hard. But instead, their response is, yeah, I could do it. And you're like, no, what are we doing?
It's interesting to me.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just like, why? I honestly, if nothing, it's just a dick measuring contest. I that's all it is. It's a numbers game. Well, did you climb a high thing? I climbed a higher thing. Did you climb a hard thing? I climbed a harder thing. It's like, we're just obsessed with one-upping each other. It just boggles my mind.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even people that are professional adventure-y kind of people that are doing this stuff, I mean, that is, they're still part of that in their brain, right? Is, well, I climbed, you know, this thing, or I did this crazy thing. I tried to get across the Atlantic on a 2x4.
Can I be like, clear that I like people who are adventure-y? Because it's not this. It's people who are like, I like to be outdoors. I like to see if I can survive in the wilderness. I like to feel close to nature. I like to exercise and feel good. This is a status update. This is a real life status update.
Yeah. And that's kind of why we just, I think, or why I, and then you kind of agreed with me that it is this weird life event, because it's not a, it, you know, you and I literally could get, let's say, $80,000 together and we could go for 2 months and try to get up Everest. It's not a good idea. But, you know, it is, and people can hike into, because this is the thing, like, it blows my mind that it's so, I mean, it's not common, but, like, it's fairly common. Like, I think 200, it's around, like, 800,000 people climb it, maybe, like, 1,000 people climb it every year, or, like, get there. So it's not common, but like it's in our zeitgeist. That might not be right. Maybe more. Well, I don't know. So I have some weird stats here. So in 2007, 630 people reached the peak. In 2018, that increased to 800. On one day, in 2012, on May 19th, 234 people alone made it to the top on the same day. Okay, so I looked it up, and what maybe some people call summit fever is also kind of maybe tied to the sunk cost fallacy, which is our tendency to follow through on an endeavor if we've already invested time, effort, or money into it, whether that the costs outweigh the benefits, which is very much tied up to our episode that we did on scams.
Totally. Right? It is definitely that, like, yeah. That, like, sorry, that started.
You're like, this is a scam.
Like, it is, like, once you're too invested, mm-hmm. it's like, you're like, I have to win now. Like, I gotta... You've kind of been screwed over. Yeah. I wonder how far up the mountain you are before you were like, what am I doing?
I think probably not far. It gets pretty cold.
I would imagine. pretty chilly. Mm-hmm.
And I think too, like you're kind of talking about the money and all of that kind of thing, but like, can you imagine spending $100,000 and it's not your fault that you're running out of oxygen? It's the 17 people in front of you that have never climbed before and are going so slow.
Nope.
That's
like, but I bet that all ties into like, really ties into, like you said, like why they're not, like, professional climbers just aren't climbing it anymore, because it's not worth the risk. It's also just like, you'll notice, like, on a mountain of like, skiing and snowboarding and stuff like that, mm-hmm. like the people who are great skiers and snowboarders are pissed when they're like, there's like people clogging it up and you're trying to get around them and they're on black diamond runs when they shouldn't be, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh man, you shouldn't be here. You're actually endangering yourself and everybody else.
That's the big
you.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand how people do not recognize that. But I guess it's the ego, is that I'm so much better than everybody else. This is my Everest, is to do this black diamond hill at the ski hill and sit on the fucking hill and almost get hit by now that's hitting.
Well, yeah, like 100%. Like there's you want to be like my brother sometimes takes me up to these places I cannot go, like on a skiing. And I'm like, don't take me up there, man. Like, I'm not good enough to be up here. This is my first time snowboarding in like 3 years. And you can be up here, but I shouldn't be up here. A lot of peer pressure. So I wonder if peer pressure sort of comes into it, like with some climbers and stuff too, like where they're like, we should do Everest. Yeah. And then it starts to be this thing of like, I could do Everest.
Well, and it's also like a lot of the times it feels like, and I don't know the stats on this, but there's a lot of older climbers doing this. Like people, and I don't mean people are old when they're in their 40s, but
that's an older climber, yeah.
Yeah. Like that's maybe too... Not too old, like, especially if you've been climbing your whole life, but if you haven't. And the other thing that pisses me off.
No, I was going to say, I might argue that, like, the good climbers, like, the older climbers are probably the better guys to
be up
absolutely.
There. I mean, more people that are going through a midlife crisis and they decided not to buy a
Porsche instead. What you're saying. Just like a 50-year-old who's just like, my wife left me and I'm. And now I'm going to prove that bitch wrong.
Like climbing Everest.
You could have been married to Mr. Everest.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's the thing, is that you'd think like those people at that age would realize also the impact that they'd have on other people. I don't know. The older I get, the more aware I am. Well, maybe a little bit here and maybe a little bit over there.
I can be honest with you, with the crowd I just had in Fort McMurray, I'm here to report that the older you get, the more belligerent
you get. That's
true,
So I guess you get like, you don't give a
there
shit.
There were these ladies. There were these ladies that I told, I was like, lady, it is your birthday, and out of respect for you, I'm going to give you a 10th warning, because what I'm about to say is going to be mean. And then her son just went, please don't do it. It's her birthday, and I was like, I know, but they're throwing ice at us.
What?
And they're belligerent. Oh, like, you know, there was a point where I was like, I will rip into you. So then the family was like, no, please don't. They'll shut up. Yeah, I think it can go one of two ways. Mm. I think people become either aware of themselves and who they are and become comfortable with mm-hmm. that, or they become sort of like start to think like of all the things they lack yeah. or haven't attained, and they start to think people owe them stuff.
Yeah.
And the more people think they're owed something, the more belligerent they become yes. and the more ignorant they become and unaware of other people, because all you're doing is walk around going, you know what? The world owes me something.
That's the thing that I can't handle on a personality. That's something that makes me want to punch people in the face. I'm like, it's not. If you're not a victim.
No one owes you shit,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you're not a victim. Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you can let us in on a little history.
Sure. So I'm going to do kind of a fairly well-trodden. Oh, no, Brittany.
Love that one.
topic. I'm going to cover the 1924 expedition, which involved George Mallory and Sandy Irvine. Sorry. I'm going to screw that up all the time because I keep wanting to say Irvine.
And what is it? Irvine?
Irvine. Yeah, Sandy okay. Irvine. His actual name is Andrew, but he had sandy hair.
What a tease.
Yeah. So, Everest was actually totally, provably summited in 1953 by Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing Norgay, which we didn't really get to talk about Sherpas very much. Just real quick, we're actually doing a companion piece to this episode because we're doing disasters on our Patreon. So we are actually going to be doing the disaster of the avalanche in 2014, which involves Sherpas, and we'll talk a little bit more about Sherpas on that one. So if you're interested in that, then please subscribe to our Patreon. But anyways,
you can go to www.podcast.com. I left out Life Perry Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, don't go to podcast.com. I don't know what's on there.
Life Perry's podcast.
Thank you. So the question is, did George Mallory and Sandy Irvine make the summit 30 years before this? So this is the big mystery.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, they were British, too. Let's make that point. So, some background to this, which I find very interesting, because it is kind of political. We talked off mic about this being kind of a political, because Everest sits in the middle between Nepal and China. And it's not just regular China. It's Tibet China. So,
right.
Yeah. It complicated. But way back in the sort of early 1900s, Britain had gotten beaten to the North Pole by American Robert Peary in 1909 and the South Pole by Norwegian Roald Amundsen. I'm sorry, Mr. Person. I should know your name. So it's kind of embarrassing for Britain, who, like, you know, they have all these colonies all over the world and they're not making all these poles. And so they could call and this is actually coming from a book called The Third Pole. This was kind of seen as like a very powerful message for Britain and like very political. The problem was at that time, I guess, Nepal wanted to keep, and it was kind of isolated already, so they wouldn't permit anyone climbing. That was in conflict at that point still with China. And so the British were forbade from going through there because they don't want to piss off China. Or apparently the Russians were somehow involved as well. So basically it was just like, don't go over there. Like, we know it's big and it's high and it will be of some renown for, Britain. But it's too much political shit. And I'm like, well, this is Britain talking.
Yeah.
Sorry, pot, kettle.
Yeah, they're like, hey, don't take things from other people. That's our job. Mm-hmm. Don't go where you're not welcome. That's up to us.
Yeah. Eventually, the Dalai Lama actually gave them permission in 1920 to go into Tibet. So that's how long ago it was, because Dalai Lama not living in Tibet anymore.
Nope.
He's not.
Is he still alive, the Dalai Lama?
Yeah, I think so. He always having punch-ups or something with Richard Gere. Isn't he like box or something? I don't know.
Oh my God.
He hangs out in Hollywood a lot, I think. Which, you know, good on him.
Good on him. Dolly.
Yeah. So the problem is, so they finally get permission in 1920 to go. Nobody's been within like 40 miles of this peak. They have no idea how to climb it. They don't even know how to get to the base of the mountain. This is also a time of high altitude climbing being in its infancy. Like, this is kind of around the time in Europe, like, there's still lots of climbing up those mountains. But, like, crampons, which we talked about, which are the metal spikes that go on your shoes.
It's going to get me every time.
Uh-huh. They go in your shoes, not in your vagina. But because the straps had to be so tight, because obviously you don't want them falling off, they would restrict circulation. Now, what is not great when you don't have a lot of oxygen and you're climbing up high? Circulation. So don't cut off your nose to spite your feet. Is that the same?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's don't cut off your leg to spite your feet or something. Yeah. Like, it's like.
That's basically cutting off your feet to spite your feet, because you're cutting off your circulation, and your circulation is going to be fucked later anyways. They also, the carabiner had only recently been invented. So that's just, you know, you see them all the time. They're kind of a oval shape, and they have like a thing that kind of comes in and out that you can hook things onto.
Yeah, it's essentially to lock onto clamps.
Yeah, exactly. And the locking carabiner, which is one that actually can lock you to the rope, I don't believe had been invented yet at all. So they were just like kind of free climbing in like woolen coats.
Yeah, like it's not. That's another thing we should mention is like how the technology of how far along like coats and stuff have come.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually incredible to me. Like, some of the stuff like Arc'teryx puts out, you're like, oh yeah, it weighs less than an ounce and it'll keep you warm in -72.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow.
Yeah. And like, yeah, these guys were just wearing like a bunch of sweaters. I think I read somewhere they had four layers on their top and three layers on the bottom. And because it's 1920, I just see them with suspenders. And I think one did have suspenders on. So
yeah, they've all got Pendleton mustaches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And those like little, they also have the suspenders for your socks, whatever those are called.
Yeah, garter belts.
Are they called garter belts for your socks? Is that what they?
Do you wear them? Oh, do they put them around their calves?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, garter belts are like essentially like to keep your, they're the same reason.
For your stockings, for ladies. Yeah.
For ladies, but for, and in hockey, it's called a garter belt as well. To keep your hockey socks up. Yeah.
Oh,
fun fact.
That is very fun. They also didn't think that humans could actually survive at 29,000 feet. Here is their evidence. Back in 1875, three French scientists took off in a hot air balloon. And they were hoping to reach a new altitude record. So they basically just like went in a hot air balloon and just went, okay, we're just going up.
They were like, je m'appelle Croissant.
Up. Up. Down.
My name is Croissant. That's so dumb.
The instruments, when it returned, showed that it had made it to 28,000 feet. So that's, you know, almost Everest. But
right.
Not this is funny, but it's kind of funny. It's not funny, but it's old, so it's fine. Two men were dead when it returned. Their faces were black and their mouths were full of blood. And the third had survived, but he had gone deaf. Oh, so I don't know. God. I just see this like fabulous, you know, hot air balloon going up and people cheering, and then it comes down and you're just like, oh fuck. Those people are dead and bleeding out of their mouths.
Dude, if somebody was like, have a great trip, Papa. And then they're like, float up. And then they're just like, and he comes back and it's the worst version that could ever happen. Yeah. It's just like, look, his head exploded. Oh, God. Le explosion.
What's the French of Devin?
What is the French of Devon? Yeah. Oh, Pierre.
Devon.
Yeah.
Little Devon.
I'm gonna go with Pierre. There's so many French Pierres.
Yeah. Most likely this was due to what we kind of talked about with the diving, was that they just went up into the altitude without doing any acclimatization. And so that's probably what killed them. But back in 1875, they were like, go! They were probably like, ghosts! Ghosts! Yeah, they were like,
they're like, Beelzebub.
They're like, here's some cocaine. Like, that'll fix you.
That'll get you humming.
Yeah.
I used to have a chiropractor who used to crack my back and go, there you go. That'll get you humming. Every time.
Anyways, this expedition in 1924 featured George Mallory, who was a World War I veteran. He was age 37, which was a little bit on the older side, because apparently they kept doing this. Like, they did it, I think they did two or three before this. And they were like, hey, you know what? Actually, like, people that are really good at climbing and would be older, this is not actually good for them. This is a young man's sport. So they almost kicked him off for being 37.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is, can you imagine? I think dance clubs should be like that. How
old? Hey, I'm 37. No.
I'm 35 and I'm not there anymore.
Well, I want to have the options open to me just in case.
No, I want somebody at the door going, hey, beat it. You had your time. We don't want to see you get too drunk, try to squat down into some sort of twist dance and not be able to get back up. Which has 100% happened to me.
Oh. Fun fact about George Mallory. He may have gotten out of some of the dangerous parts of World War I because he was renowned for being this great British climber. So, I mean, you don't really think about that stuff when they're throwing you in a trench of blood and basically to the death.
Right.
But yeah. And also, there was a man serving under Winston Churchill as his secretary, and he had a crush on George Mallory, so they think that was one of the reasons he got a better assignment, like, at the back. So, being cute, very helpful. The person he went up with was Andrew Sandy Irvine, which, like I said, he was 22 years old. And here's a maybe thing that we think we should learn, but we haven't. He had very little climbing experience and had not been over 5,500 feet. So, which was really not that far. But he
isn't.
Was,
And how tall is Mount Everest? Is it 17,000 feet? Is that what it is?
It is. Sorry, I haven't written down. I don't want to fuck it up. It is 29,000 feet.
Oh,
29,031.69 feet, or 8,848.86 meters. That's the 2020 number, which Everest might have been slightly shorter when they climbed it in 1924. Because it's growing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's a baby mountain, so it's still growing. It's
still coming up.
Yeah.
Mount Everest is like, keep trying to climb me, boo.
I know. Here's another thing, and like kind of what we're talking about with the psychology, is that in 5 years, you no longer climbed... You are no longer the highest person anymore to climb that or whatever. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Because if you climbed the mountain 10 years ago, it's now higher. So you're not, you didn't climb the highest peak.
Oh, I love that. Dude, I love that so much. Because it's like, now you got a new generation of people like, did you climb it 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would have been pretty, like, just passive aggressive too.
Yeah.
I guess that would have been pretty easy at that time, though. Mm-hmm. But good for you.
Mm-hmm. It's like,
dude, I think what you did is great.
Okay, so on this trip in May of 1924, they'd, I think, made two attempts to go up and had failed. So George Mallory, who again is one of the best climbers on this trip, decides to take Sandy Irvine.
Oh, I'm calling him Uncle Sandy in my head. Okay. So you call
he's
him
a baby though. He's only 22. Can't be an uncle yet. Well, okay. I don't know. In some places he can be an uncle.
Like
places. In Britain, he probably could be an uncle. Fine.
Or if you just had a sibling that was literally,
yeah,
like no, most people yeah. have kids by 20.
I know, back then especially, he was probably an uncle of 200 people.
I'm like, yeah.
So the thing with Irvine, it was that he was actually a very good engineer, and he was working with these newfangled oxygen sets because they kind of figured Ooh. Out fairly early on, you can't get up there without oxygen. So that's maybe one of the reasons that Mallory picked him to go up to make this last sort of try up the to the summit rather than somebody that was maybe a little bit more experienced. Poor Sandy was actually suffering from diarrhea and a badly burned face when he was asked, but he rallied.
Oh, God. That could be the title of every vacation story I've ever had.
I think that that's pretty much every trip up Everest too, because your body doesn't work anymore. Like there's so many bugs, like stomach bugs that get passed through everybody. So
really,
it's like being on a cruise ship, but at like 8,000 meters, like 8 kilometers in the air. So yeah, because you're using like a lot of the same camping stuff. People are in close quarters. It's not socially distanced. So
yeah, you're in. I wonder if that's a word we'll use forever.
Socially distanced.
Like, yeah, I think it will be. I think it'll be like, so. Oh god, I hope we socially distance while we're there.
So anyways, they decide to set off from a high camp. So usually what you have to do, we were talking about the acclimatization, that might not be the right word. You generally try to go up the mountain and come down the mountain and come up down the mountain and come down the mountain, because your body eventually will actually get kind of used to having less oxygen, and I believe that it makes more red blood cells, which leads to some other issues, which I'll mention in the interesting facts. But that's why they have all these high camps, is that you would go from camp to camp, not just that you would do 1, 2, 3, 4, although they may have actually. But anyways, they set off from high camp on June 8th. And they were last seen by teammate Noel O'Dell early in the afternoon, high up on the northeast ridge, approximately at 28,200 feet, moving, quote unquote, expeditiously.
Sure.
Towards the top.
Okay. Had a little pep in their step.
Yeah.
That's fancy for pep in your step.
That is fancy for pep in your step. they were 1,000 feet maybe from the summit when he saw them, and then a storm rolled in and they never saw them again. Well, kind of. So here's the thing, is that they could have summited and then come back down and died. Like you said, like most the deaths that happened on the way down.
Right.
But we don't know, because obviously they can't talk and there was no cell phones back then. So they do find one of the guys later, and I'll go into that in a little bit. But the reason that this then becomes a big controversy, obviously, the two that summited officially, which is Sir Edmund Hillary, he was from New Zealand, but Britain's kind of like, but we're in New Zealand, really. So again, it's like a big thing for Britain. Tenzing Norgay was, I believe, from Nepal. And this is the other thing. Sorry, there's so many things about Everest. There's two ways to get up. You either take the Chinese side or you take the Nepal side. And so
right.
It was climbed by Hillary and Tenzing Norgay on the other side than what Mallory had climbed. So Mallory climbed on the Chinese side. These other guys had climbed on the south side, I believe. So in 1960, the Chinese had closed, actually, they'd closed the mountain due to Mao coming in and doing some stuff. He was busy.
Doing some wild stuff.
Yeah. So they closed it to outsiders. And so when the Chinese made their first summit, they were actually the third to summit Everest, but the first to summit on that side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
it's a big deal, especially for the Chinese, because it's a huge propaganda thing even today, that if Mallory and Irvine had summited, that takes away a lot of their prestige or whatever. Which, again, although this is bullshit, who fuck cares, go off the mountain.
Whatever. But sorry, say that again. It's just that if they had summited, or if they hadn't summited, it would take away all the prestige.
If these two British climbers in 1924 had summited on this side, that would mean that the Chinese weren't the first to summit on that side.
Right.
Does that make sense? Sorry, that's kind of
confusing. Yeah, so it would be, no, so it would mean that it would be the, so, but they don't know. They don't know if he summoned it or not.
But that's where it gets very interesting. And so then I went down a rabbit hole, which is less history, but kind of history. The hope is to eventually find their camera, because apparently this VPK camera, which I believe is a Kodak camera, they believe if the body of the camera is still intact, the film would still be salvageable because it's up in that deep freeze. So basically a lot of things when they're found up in that high area in Everest, including bodies, are pretty much preserved because it's so fucking cold up there.
Right.
So
they could they could go up and find it if they really wanted to.
Well, that's the problem now. So that they think that if they find this camera, then they would prove, because they would have taken a picture. What if it was dark? Then they didn't know if they would take a picture. The other thing that complicates this is that when that Chinese expedition happened in 1960, one of the climbers, Zhu Jing, said he saw a body on the north face. Now, that would be one of the climbers. That would be Irvine. They kind of talk about how he's really not supposed to talk about that, because that would mean like people were on the mountain before them.
Right.
And I think they kind of just propaganda-wise just are like, yeah, we're the first ones there.
They're like, hey, don't worry about it, Kay.
Yeah.
They're like, we did it, so don't worry about it.
It's fine. Don't look into it too much. Otherwise, you'll end up like that tennis player that's now not missing or whatever.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, though. That's what's so funny is that people are just, they just want this thing. And even if they're lying about it, or even, you know, even if they know they might not have been the first, this is so important to them that they're like, oh, we'll just lie about it.
Like, yeah. And it's a big nation thing. Like there's a lot of stuff about like, oh, that's the first woman from Canada to do that. Or that's the first person from, you know, whatever. And so it's this very weird country.
This could actually be honestly be like an episode of its own, like firsts, because it's so funny to me. Like I heard the sentence the other day, Joe Biden is actually going under anesthesia to have a colonoscopy. So technically Kamala Harris is the first, and I'm just like, okay, like let's not get this specific. Like it's, you guys are lying to yourselves now.
Yeah. That does not count. That is cheating.
No.
Well, not cheating.
And also, like, do you really want to tell people, like, I was the first female president during a colonoscopy? There was a caveat. It was during someone's butt camera.
Someone was sticking a camera up the president's bum, and therefore, I was in charge. So they found Sandy Irvine's ice axe, like, way, way, way back. And so that kind of helped them to frame where they may have fallen, because they believe that they fell.
Okay.
In 1999, an expedition was launched, the first of fucking many. Actually, that's not the first of fucking many. I think they started doing these expeditions like back in the 80s to find the bodies. And they actually, like 20 minutes in, not 20 minutes into the thing, because obviously you have to get up there, but 20 minutes into there looking at that time, they found Mallory, and he was face down. Body was pretty much intact. There are pictures online if you want to go look at them. He's got, like, his one of his hands is pretty much just normal. His back and his backside are, like very, very alabaster white. Like, almost okay. From the sun, I guess.
Interesting.
But he's facing upwards, kind of like, and this is the big controversy, because the body has been moved, obviously. And the body probably moved at the time, but it was frozen to the rocks at that point. And they, right. The people that found him said that it kind of looked like he had fallen there and was alive, because he was kind of had his leg over the injured part of another leg. Like, he was protecting it. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm just pulling up pictures. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so weird that his body's white like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they did not find the camera on him. Now they think probably that Irvine, being the less climber, he would have been the one to have the camera anyways, because he would be the one taking the picture rather than being in the picture.
So what they can't figure out, obviously, is that if he died there or on the way down.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
One thing they did not find on Mallory's body was a picture of Mallory's wife, Ruth, which he said he would leave at the top of the mountain. So that's interesting. Also, though, it's been suggested that they should have looked for rocks in their pockets, because that's what Norgay and Hillary did when they came down. They took rocks from the top of Everest and put them in their pockets. And I believe that George Mallory had talked about doing that. Because, I mean, like, even it's not, you know, it's like taking a moon rock, right? Like,
yeah,
you'd do that. But because they were looking in rocks, and like, his pockets were intact and stuff, but they may not have, if they saw rocks in his pockets, they might not have really thought about it.
Right.
So they may have missed it.
So is that body just still there then?
Yep, it's still there. There's a whole thing about this. They, a photo of that photo that you have, that you're looking at, ended up all over the press right after.
Right.
Causing like a giant controversy. It was seen as very disgusting that that's what they were doing. I don't think the expedition meant for the picture to leak like that, but you know,
right? Because it's kind of like it's like sort of an indignant thing to do to a dead body.
Yeah. So there's a lot of this kind of weird stuff that goes around this. The other thing is, if they find the camera. Apparently somebody from, I don't know, some lawyer from some big thing once, like, for fun, tried to figure out who owns the camera.
Oh.
But because copyright laws have changed, like, 3 times since, you know, that time. Also, like, who owns it? The British government? Who, like, all these people are dead, so is it their relatives? And he said it would be so complicated that they'd never be able to figure it out. But obviously, if they find these pictures, they're hugely profitable and could be worth like $1 million to sell to like a newspaper, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's a whole thing. And apparently, like, going to look for these bodies. So they want to find Irvine now, because obviously maybe he has the camera or rocks in his pockets. So there were 2 expeditions in 2019. Which I thought was weird, and then I realized this just seems to happen like almost every couple of years to find Irving. I watched one on Discovery Plus, which is called The Greatest Everest Greatest Mystery, led by Jake Norton. They actually go back to Mallory's body and do kind of look at it a little bit, but they are unsuccessful. If you're thinking you missed something, they were unsuccessful. The other expedition is featured in a book called The Third Pole, which I'm reading right now, and I didn't finish. I was trying to finish, which is very good, just on the history of Everest as well. They also did this in 2019. They didn't find him. I mean, it's very hard. Obviously, you're up there. It's a very – in 2019, actually, they didn't have a lot of snow up there, which is good. So that means that it's easier to do excavation. It's also really hard to walk on that. Because right. This is not like where they think, because they believe, because there's a rope, I think, found around Mallory's stomach that looks like it was ripped. They believe they were tied together. They fell. The line maybe got cut between the two of them. So Mallory ended up somewhere and Irvine ended up somewhere else.
Right.
Some people think Irvine was still alive and walking around and may have gotten lost. So they really don't know where it, like, it's not within like a 5 foot.
Yeah. Like, you know, they're pretty, square, I just right? looked at the map. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I was just looking and they're very far apart.
Yeah.
Like, they're miles apart.
Yeah. So, and you combine that with it being dangerous to be up there anyways. It's very controversial for them to be up there because, like, the Sherpa, I think at one point said that they didn't want to be involved in this. This seemed like a really stupid idea to be looking for somebody, a 100-year-old man's dead body. Why were they right. risking their lives to do this? Obviously, the Chinese don't want them there. So you can't really tell anybody. If you're planning, and if you and I were going to do our thing, we're going to do
right,
plan expedition. An expedition. Yeah. We couldn't tell anybody. You know,
I changed my mind about this whole thing.
Yeah.
I want to climb Everest. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for what I said before. Let's go find this dead old man.
Yeah. We couldn't tell anybody because people would be, if they thought we were going to be successful, they would be trying to get in on the project. People might not give us permits. So
people
yeah.
might try to kill you.
Yeah. Who knows? It's all hugely confusing and very weird. So, yeah. So it's a well-known story, but if you're interested in this stuff, the third pole kind of goes into this. And yeah, there's tons of documentaries on it, but the weird behind the scenes stuff is the thing that I'm really interested in. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Dude, that's very cool. Yeah. Great job.
Thanks.
Lots to know. Yeah. There's like, it's such a twisty, turny road.
It is. It is. And like, I think that's kind of why I get obsessed with Everest is, you know, we can talk about how it's this, you know, ego thing, like ego padding or whatever you want to call it. But it's very complicated. There's lots of different things. The Sherpa is another thing that we didn't really mention, but you know, for people that live in Nepal, it's a very, very poor country. This is one of their only, I want to say exports. That's not really services, I guess. Tourism is like one of their only things they really have to make money
right.
at. So, but also it's very dangerous and a lot of them die and people take advantage of them. So it's, yeah. It's
right. Just... I read though it was a $300 million a year business.
Yeah. That's so, I mean, cheaper than I thought it would be, but
that's it's still a lot of money.
It's
to
still
bring
a lot of
in,
money.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But holy smokes, this is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Well, should I dive into this drink?
Yes. This is my favorite name of a drink right now.
This is the dumbest, but also so funny. What is the history of this drink, you ask? Well,
the
Carla,
Mountain Dew-me.
This is the Mountain Dew-me. the history is that I looked up a drink that mm-hmm. I thought would suit our purpose.
And, I think so. The mountain does do people. It fucks them.
Mountain does you in.
Yeah.
It's your last hurrah. So this is actually, I really like this drink.
This drink is amazing. I haven't had Mountain Dew since I was 20, probably 14.
Honestly, I used to work at Pizza Hut when I was 14 years old, and it was on the fountain pop, and I literally lived on it, I'm certain, that, and chicken wings I still live on chicken wings, but
right. yeah,
it was so good.
Yeah.
So, the Mountain Dew meat consists of melon liqueur, mm-hmm. Triple sec, pineapple juice, and Mountain Dew, baby. Ooh. And then you can garnish it with an orange slice and a cherry. And so you're going, it's pretty, it's decently boozy. You got an ounce and a half of melon liqueur.
Yeah.
You got 3/4 of an ounce of triple sec. And then the rest is just juice. It's pretty sugary, honestly.
Very sugary. Yeah. I probably could have one of these, but I was feeling a little like didn't have a lot of energy. And now I feel like I could go run up Mount Everest.
Yeah, you know what? It's, you know what I like about Mountain Dew? It just lies to you with its name. It's like, it's supposed, it's, it should be like, it's like Mountain Fresh. It's like,
except for it's like bright green.
So. Seven Up with something else in it.
It looks like alien juice.
It looks like alien juice. It's pretty tasty. Yeah. I also, I omitted the triple sec and I put in tequila just because I felt like doing that. But yeah.
That might be, I like tequila. That might be better. The triple sec, this doesn't taste boozy enough for me.
That was the thing. Like, I was like, I felt like I was like, yeah, it's like, I can see the amount, but it's all sort of liqueur. So I decided to harden it up by putting tequila in there. Which I appreciate my choice. I felt like it was a good choice.
I'm excited that we now have melon liqueur that we had to buy, and we should use that in more things. That's also bright green. I like things that are weird in color and don't look natural.
Me too. Also, here's a hot tip. Melon liqueur doesn't come in a small bottle.
No, it does not.
You have to buy the 30. So I went to the liquor store and I was like, you guys, you don't have small bottles of melon liqueur? And some guy like climbed out of what I can only describe as a hole of boxes and was like, melon liqueur hasn't been come in a smaller bottle in 300 years. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm actually doing a podcast on the history of drinks. I wasn't here to hear that. Yeah. So,
you're like, do tell me the history of 300 years ago when you used to sell melon liqueur in smaller bottles, though.
Yeah, we were laughing. I was like, when in your life will you use melon liqueur again? And he was just like, never.
No.
I was like, that's the big business melon liqueur knows this.
Yeah.
And they sell you this bottle because they're like, this is the only time we're going to get you to buy this. So exactly. You have to buy it in this quantity.
You'll have it for the next 20 years. So there's no market in this for us. So
it'll be right next to your blue carousel and your whatever other odd liqueur you have.
Absinthe. It's going to be next to the absinthe. All the colored things are going together.
All the colored things that you think are going to be delightful and you use all the time. But it's nice to actually, I actually don't mind collecting like liqueurs like that because then when people come over, you're like, oh, I can make you a fun drink actually.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So so check that out. The Mountain Dew. It's also, I feel like you could make that in a shot form too.
Yeah. I think this would be much.
Like that'd be a really good shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just kind of have to like go, you'd have to maybe like omit. You could go like the pineapple juice, the Mountain Dew, and then like vodka or something. That would be very good.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vodka would work well on this.
Yeah, I liked it. I honestly, I didn't know that I was going to like it because it seemed pretty sugary. And I was like, I don't know about this.
But I know, and I don't really like sugary ones. But this one, I think it's because, I don't know, I think it's bringing me back to my 2014 years. 2014. back in my 14th grade 9, when I was in grade 9.
I wish I was 14 in 2014.
No.
I'm like, actually, no, I don't. I'd have longer to live and everything's going bye-bye. So,
it's a yummy little drink.
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah.
It's, I'll put up the little recipe. It's pretty tasty. So if you have a chance to try it out, it's nice. And you know what? I don't know if your family's like mine, but like, I'm talking to the listener specifically,
my family is not like,
I know my family is,
if
not,
I made my family not, this, they would punch me in the face and kick me out of my,
they'd
own
be
house.
Like, you know, like, the sugar content is out of this world.
Environmentally, but my
mom and my aunts and stuff are always like, make us a new drink from your podcast, which I think is really cute. But,
this would work well as like like a summertime drink, but also like a Halloween drink if you wanted like a weird, because it's green. It looks like alien blood.
It looks like alien juice. It's bright green. There's every ingredient that goes into it is green, so it just keeps getting greener.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So, anyways, maybe you could give us a few extra bonus tips, fun facts.
Now, I don't know if you experienced the same thing when you were younger, but there was a lot of myths about Mountain Dew back in the day. Apparently, it would cause like impotency in men. But apparently, it didn't have any caffeine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So me running around being like, I have so much caffeine. No, honey, that was sugar. You idiot. That was sugar. 14-year-old Carla. In Canada, there was a law that you could not allow caffeine in products that are light in color, which
apparently... That's right. You couldn't caffeinate light drinks.
Yeah, and apparently that's like why we didn't get Red Bull till a lot later.
That is why. Sorry, I'm like learning. I'm so excited. But yeah. I remember Red Bull being banned, and it was like such a controversy. Like, we used to go down to the States all the time and buy Red Bulls and be like, yeah, jacks you up. When we were like 15.
Yeah. apparently the law changed in 2010, but I mean, I've had Red Bull before 2010.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, I think, you know what, maybe I think the Red cans Bull. Or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Because you couldn't actually see the color of the liquid.
Right. And I so mean, they were... this now, I think this has caffeine in it. I looked on the thingy.
So... Also, they might have, everything must have changed.
Yeah. So if I'm not asleep until 4 a.m., I'll just be reading Everest books anyways. It's fine. nothing else on the go. Let's see. Okay, so we talked about... These are more kind of facts about Everest than interesting facts. But just so you get a little bit more context, the height is a big thing. Like I said, it's maybe grown. It's also, of course, it's been disagreed upon because China and Nepal and everyone's going to argue. But they actually, that number that I gave earlier, the 848.86 meters, was the agreed upon elevation in 2020 by Nepal and China. So.
Oh, wow.
They agreed on that. That's nice.
They're like, you guys, it's getting hard to agree on actual facts, not disagree on actual facts. Exactly. Like,
let's agree on that mountain height and just leave it at there. And we can measure it in 5 years.
We're just digging our toes in the sand on this for no reason.
Yeah. It's
located... Not a mountain they wanted to die on, would you say, Carla?
Very nice, very nice. It's located in the Great Himalayas of Southern Asia, like I said, on the border of Nepal, and technically this is the Tibet Autonomous Region of China. I love when they name things in China. It's great. it is a three-sided pyramid shape. There's the North Face, which is where they got their name for the North Face jackets and all that stuff, which is the Tibet
side. Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's the
I thought that was Canadian.
That's what I thought too. I assume it's named after this, but because like there's a lot of stuff that you're reading like about mountaineering, you're like, oh wait, that's that company's name. Oh yeah, okay. I don't know where Eddie Bauer, what mountain range Eddie Bauer is, but I'm sure it's in there somewhere. there's the Southwest Face, which is in Nepal, and this features the Khumbu Icefall, which is what we're going to talk about in our Patreon episode, because it's a fucking behemoth and a bad, evil icefall place. There is actually a third side of Everest, which I didn't know about, called the East Face or the Kangshu Face, which is in Tibet. It's very difficult, and so therefore less used, but it has been summited. So we talked about issues that what happened when you go up to the death zone. Because of all this, your body is basically breaking down, like you said, or dying. You have problems with digestion, sleeping, confused thinking. You can also get two different kinds of edema. Woohoo!
Yay!
There is high altitude cerebral edema, which is the blood flow is increased to your brain. Which I was like, isn't that good? No, that causes brain swelling and then coma.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a hemorrhage waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's not great. the high altitude pulmonary edema. Do you want to guess what that is?
Yeah, when your heart explodes.
I thought that too. No, it's increased flow to your lungs.
Pulmonary?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it leaks into the air sacs and then essentially just causes drowning. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. 310 people have died. You can actually go and see on Wikipedia. There's a list. And that's including 4 from this year of 2021. So if you think people are not climbing and social distancing, they are not. They're going up Everest and they're still dying. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So guys, don't do it. Go climb a hill.
Just stop doing it.
Walk in a straight line for a little while.
Honestly, if you're talking to your friends about climbing Mount Everest, have yourself some Mountain Dewy.
Yeah.
And just think things over. Be yeah. like, hey, it's like, if we're going to commit all this time and money to doing something that doesn't matter, why don't we commit all these time and money to doing something that does matter?
You know what is also very helpful? Just break that person's leg, because it's going to end up probably broken at some point in this thing. And you're going to save a lot of people. Toe. Yeah.
Play eeny, meeny, miny, moe with your toes and then chop whatever one you land on, because you're not going to get to choose up there.
Yeah.
And just go from there.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And then you'll probably...
Photoshop is unreal these days. You can Photoshop yourself at the top of Mount Everest. Exactly. You know what I would do? I would Photoshop my head onto that dead fucking person's body.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, my tan be like, hashtag mood would be what I wrote. But
yes. Very nice. Very nice. Brittany will be doing the art for this episode on Instagram. So I am feeling we'll get.
If you and also if you follow us on Instagram, if you have any tips or tricks for Photoshop, you let me know.
Yeah.
We long ago should have contacted somebody to do our Photoshop for us, but I think it's the funniest thing in the world.
I think you do great, and if you dream big enough, Brittany, you'll be the
best.
You'll be the Everest of Photoshop.
You're the stupidest Photoshopper I know. Congratulations. Well, you guys, it's another episode in the bag. Holy Gina, we did it. And like Carla mentioned before, we're going to do a fun little sort of sister episode to this over on the Patreon, where we talk a little bit more about Everest. Do you want to maybe give a better synopsis of what we're doing?
Sure. We're going to talk about the 2014 avalanche in the Khumbu Icefall, which killed 16 people. And this is involving the Sherpas, so we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And this is in our series right now. This is the third in our series of the disaster series. Cover disasters and then we pair them with drinks because we're super classy and really
respectful. Is it a little tone deaf? Yeah, it's a little tone deaf, but we make sure they're old so we don't hurt anybody's feelings.
This one not old, so we're fucked. But
but at least far away. We make sure they're at least far away.
Yes, we mean all great respect, but we're both kind of obsessed with disasters. Obviously, I just treat Everest as a disaster because there is just 17 of them. Every day. So yeah, so that's what we're doing over in the Patreon. So if you have anything that you want us to cover, we've been doing a lot of Canadian disasters, so
Well, that's just sort of,
which is good because we didn't know them
and we hear and if you're looking at in the news, they just keep on a coming. So
if you have some ones that are less known and you want us to cover, let us know on Instagram or send us an email.
Or if you're from Vancouver and you want to drive my car back home.
Yeah. We're very lucky to have Brittany back. I thought that was it. There was no more life pairings. Brittany was stuck in Tawasin.
I was getting real, real accustomed to life over there in Tawasin. check it out. Where you can go over to lifepairingspodcast.com and click in the Patreon in the top right corner of the website. You can also just hit up Life Pairings Podcast on patreon.com as well.
It's also in the pretty show easy notes to below find. You. Not physically below you, but below the episode.
And it's just like a couple bucks a week, a month, not even a week.
I know.
And you get all kinds of extra bonus content. There's different levels. It's a lot of fun, and we're real excited about it over there. So thank you for listening. Thanks for coming back. We love you.
Thanks, guys.